we started promoting it. We were afraid to mention it on our show. We were afraid to, like, be really verbal about it and kind of pushy about it, because we didn't. We didn't think that it would be in good taste to do so, but when we explained, like, hey, this could be a career for us, this could be a job, right? I was able to leave my job and become a full-timer on this, and that was only because of fans, and we've been developing that as a business ever since, 3 years later.
Some of you already know my next guest, Travis Vangroff. He's the co-creator of The White Vault. He's an award-winning audio fiction podcaster, won more than 14 Audioverse Awards, a second Webby honoree for sound design, and by growing a huge Patreon fan base, he has been able to design a lifestyle, a career entirely focused around his passion, audio dramas and podcasting. And this is what we're going to talk about today, how to live a successful creative life, and how to turn it into a business and a career. This is a long interview. The first 30 minutes are really about creativity and the nitty-gritty arts and craft of it. And the second half of it is focused on the business side, Patreon, and how to grow an audience. So if you're mostly interested in that, you can just jump 30 minutes ahead. In other news, we're officially attacking the Pan Ultimate episode of CryptoZ. So prepare to clean your feed. We're going to remove all those interviews into another feed, and we'll resume the second half of the season very soon. Thank you so much for continuing to support CryptoZ, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share. If you want to be sure to not miss out on any announcements, get on our texting list at 646-229-3423, or you can subscribe to our mailing list on euphony.media, which you can find in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hey, Travis, thank you so much for doing this. I know you're in Portland, so my thoughts are with you. How's it going down there?
Hey, Hadrian. Thanks for having me. Portland itself is not doing that great, but I am in COVID isolation and have not really left this house except to pick up the bare necessities of bagels once a week.
Yeah, we hope the situation is gonna like clear up over there, because it's frightening at so many levels. I don't want to get into it, but it's keeping us awake at night.
And likewise, we can sort of hear stuff out the window if we leave it open.
With my wife this morning, we were like, "Hey, how much is an apartment in Paris to rent for a year?"
Well, Paris is kind of pretty. I've been there a few times. You guys have some, at least as a tourist, Paris was a lot of fun, I should say.
No, Paris is great, even when you live there. It's where I was born and it's where I was raised. And, you know, it has a ton to offer. You know, I chose America because I still think it's the place to be, even now. Well, even now, quote unquote, where you can, you know, create for a global audience, and it's also a great place for self-expression and creativity. And those are the two things I'd like to talk with you about today, and how you can design a livelihood or a lifestyle entirely around your personal creations.
And I'd like to mirror what you said. I love film. I love a lot of the American and also international films that I've seen. And I think podcasting is a great medium through which to tell stories as audio drama, or more like the audiobook format. It's very effective.
Yeah, and I think podcasting also is evolving. At the beginning, it felt very much like an extension of radio, with a lot of talent and creators coming from the radio world. And now, as the medium is exponentially growing, we're starting to see a new wave of creators coming from other areas, like filmmaking, for example.
Podcasting as a medium, I would agree with. If you go to a podcast convention, you can meet many of them, and you'll see a lot of people who are from the radio world, or who've been involved in the radio world. There are also a surprising number of people from the business world who are trying to do educational podcasts and get people to understand a little bit more about maybe business law or wooden boats or whatever their niche happens to be. And I think the education component and the storytelling component, even if it's a nonfiction podcast, there is a storytelling component to what you're doing. And I think that's what draws us together, because auditory communication is so intimate by nature.
Right.
And, it's a lot of fun.
Do you listen to podcasts to learn new stuff?
I listen to a lot of fiction podcasts, a little bit less regularly than I used to because I don't get to drive in my car and have a lot of free time. It's more like when I'm doing dishes. And it's more for understanding what people are doing in the fiction space, specifically those that are audio dramas, because I'm impressed and want to learn more about sound design and the integration of music, sound, silence, and the human voice, and kind of how it all, the marriage of those different instruments together to kind of be better. Because if you're a filmmaker, you get better by watching movies and seeing, you know, oh, J.J. Abrams uses lens flare and zooms in every time there's a really big spaceship that passes by. Why does he do that? And it can give you some really great ideas you can build off. So I use it more for education as an artist would look at other art for inspiration, as opposed to how to run my business. But I do listen to some interviews on occasion, typically of people in the fiction space and like what they're doing.
Oh, interesting. I had planned to like move into the nitty-gritty of audio drama later in the interview, but since we're on the topic, how do you listen to audio drama? How do you break it down? What are you listening for? Because for film, for example, if you're trying to learn from a director, you have to be actively watching, and that might require for you to pause and, you know, pay attention to the camera placement, pay attention to the camera movement, pay attention to the lens, pay attention to the lighting, the actors, the editing, the music, all those things. So how do you do that for audio drama?
Yeah, so to clarify, audio drama is any interaction of voice, scripted or unscripted, in a way that's dramatic. That can be music, that can be sound effects. It doesn't have to be any specific type to be considered audio drama. I typically listen to large cast audio drama that have sound effect involvement or really unique music involvement. And I'm listening to hear how they are using music to create a mood or tell a story, because my show's The White Vault is a horror fiction podcast that I do the sound and production and co-create. And we don't use music as much as you would think. We use it very sparingly, almost not at all. But when we do, we try to use it effectively and as effectively as we can to help influence the story and guide it in a certain direction. I'm listening to podcasts to try and figure out how they are using music to influence your opinion on a scene. And then in sound design, you have a gunfight. Action doesn't always sell particularly well, violent action, that is. Like fights in audio drama, because you can't see what's happening. You just hear these sounds of and thunks and explosions. So how are people effectively using panning or perspective? I listened to Joseph a few weeks ago, and they had a moment in the show where the guy fires a bullet. He aims the bullet. Everything else gets quiet. You hear his breathing, and then you hear the gunshot, and you follow the bullet from the main character across a field through a tunnel where there are cars, and to this other area where it plinks directly next to the villain, but doesn't hit him. And now suddenly you're with the villain. And I thought that was a really interesting transition for audio, that you followed the bullet from one character to the other, and you hear the villain say, "Oh, that one almost hit me." And he, you know, gets really emotional and says a couple of things to his assistant. So there are a lot of unique ideas that are being done in audio that can shape your mind to think differently. So I think it's very important.
Yeah. If you like action sci-fi, Joseph is really interesting. I heard about it at the Austin Film Festival, I think. It was on a panel with the creator of The Big Loop or Black Tapes.
Oh, he does all of those, Paul Bay.
And he spoke very highly of it, so I immediately went and checked it out, because that was also part of the goal with Cryptozy, is to create this like very cinematic and immersing adventure that's, you know, full of action as well. And you pointed something important, which is true for action, but it's true for everything, is that one is to make very clear images so the listener doesn't wonder what's going on. And it's not because you don't have a visual that you can't make people see, but one has to really, you know, think about the kind of mental images that sound can create. And I love the example that you just mentioned, because I could definitely hear how like the bullet can slow down and every sound around it into a deep rumble, and suddenly through the tunnel, you know, the echo of the tunnel would change, and how it would suddenly reaccelerate again and maybe hit a metal surface that's very distinctive.
Yeah, those sorts of things like that are very impressive to me. And I think, like you're saying, you wouldn't think you could do that. You know, you wouldn't think, how can I change the perspective? Would I use like a whooshing sound and have go from one side to the other? Would I do the abstract slowdown, the bullet time sort of thing that they used in The Matrix? And coming up with different ways to approach even things like, okay, the main character presses a button on their computer. What sound does it make? That can be very telling. Are we in like Aliens, the Alien franchise by Ridley Scott, where everything is clunky 1980s hardware? Or is this like something sci-fi, modern, futuresque, or Star Trek, which are also like different soundscapes that you would use if you pushed a button? So it's very, the sound, for instance, Star Trek's very clicky. Other shows and movies, Star Wars would probably have like a car sound.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is that when in film, you kind of have the liberty to make it sound the way you want, because there's so much information coming from the image that you can, you know, you have a lot of liberty. But like in audio only, you do have to rely a little bit on the culture and how people think a computer should sound, so that if you place a sound, it's clear to, there's no confusion about what that is.
Yes.
And so I find sometimes struggling a little bit, like, okay, well, you know, those new Apple keyboard are probably not going to cut it, because, you know, they're more and more silent. I don't know if you encounter that kind of problem.
Yeah. There's a book called Bombs Always Beep, written by the We're Alive creator, Casey Wayland. It's a very good book. But the title of the book is explained as, if you're listening to an audio drama and someone has a bomb, and you know, it's a timed bomb, you know, time's ticking down, we've got to do something, it's dramatic, the audience expects it to make a beeping noise. If it's not making a beeping noise, we don't know there's a bomb in the room. So you have to rely on conditioned audio cues to some degree, like you'd suggested. And you can sometimes break those through character reaction to a sound or dialogue. And then you can recondition your audience to expect different effects for different sounds. So like you'd mentioned with the Apple or the texting sound you'd hear on your phone, which sounds more like a...
All right, let's get started, because I feel like I could geek about this stuff all day. So I wanted to track back a little bit and hear about living a creative life and how you came to podcasting, because I know that you studied music. You studied game design, and I kind of wanted to hear what came first and the journey that led you here.
Sure. When I was a kid, my parents got me a little handheld video recorder that used tapes that are pretty bulky. And I used that as a child and made these little short films with my toys and my friends. And they were silly. They were stupid. I documented various trips that we did around the world because we were fortunate enough to do quite a bit of traveling. And as I grew up, I made one or two short films with a budget of around $10,000 to $20,000, which I was very lucky to be director, or co-director, co-producer on with one of my friends who now works and does film in LA. Mm-hmm. When I got into college, I got in a band. I started a band. I played accordion because I started playing accordion when I was 16, but I wanted to be in a band all my life. And I did that in college, did that for 15 years, wrote a bunch of albums, did a bunch of cover music for video games because I like video game music because I'm a huge video game nerd, and actually had a fair bit of success in music. We became voted Orlando's number one rock band in Orlando, Florida, a few years. We did some touring in Europe, some touring in the US, fairly successful, question mark. But I wanted to tell stories in my music. More and more, like the songs were cool, but I sort of got into like folklore to some degree, like telling about different historical figures, mythical figures like Koshi from Russian folklore, Baba Yaga. But I wanted to tell greater stories, and I thought maybe if I did something that was like part album, part like it effectively was an audio drama, but I didn't have the words for it at the time, that it would be something really cool, kind of unaware of the audio drama stuff happening, as I was ignorant. So I did that a couple of years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. I made Legend of the Boar Knight. It was every other track is music, and then every other track is the story of this little pig, this hero, the Boar Knight, as he trots nobly across the land of Porcalore to rescue it from the evil undead cook Dracula, his fast food franchises. And it was so much fun that my wife and I got into comics.
Were you already married at the time? Mm-hmm. Is that something you've done together?
No. So I had a girlfriend. Her name was Caitlin, and the two of us decided. She saw I was doing a lot of stuff in comics because I also was doing that simultaneously for 15 years. Or so. I'm still doing it.
How did the comics go?
So comics are tough. They take a lot of time to make. They're very expensive if you're not the artist. And I'm not a very good artist, so I wasn't the artist, and I'm still not. But we wanted to do something together as a couple that was creative. So we were either going to program a video game, which we tried, and it was really painstaking and took forever, and it wasn't really for us. Or we were going to make a podcast kind of in the vein of maybe No Sleep, which was a podcast. She introduced me to podcasts. I did not know about them until we'd met, and we kind of started listening together. But we wanted to make one kind of like Sayer or maybe Night Vale, but more intense with characters that are at a location. Our big gimmick, though, was that we wanted it to be in real time. So no jump cuts, no switching from scene to scene too quickly. You kind of follow the characters, live and breathe in the world. And we decided that we were going to work on a thing called Liberty, which is my comic book empire that had not been built yet, because we still hadn't released anything despite having worked on it for years and making pages, because, again, they take a long time to make.
So Liberty was the comic book you were talking about.
Yes, and I had a bit of an audio editing background. I didn't know that bands didn't record in the same room together until I started doing music. And then I realized, oh, okay, the drummer's in Utah, the guitarist is in West Virginia, I'm in Florida, I'm just going to edit all the different parts together that we record in different rooms, kind of in, you know, and we haven't played at the same time. I could do that with voices. So I got all my friends to play voice actors on our podcast in the same regard. I just sent him a script and said, send me 3 takes of your audio so I can take the best take that you record and kind of put it with the other voices.
Did you see podcasting at the time as a potential like way of life?
Podcasting was a hobby. I wanted to do something creative with my friend, Caitlin. And it was the greatest decision that we have made outside of deciding to date each other, which was her saying yes after me heckling her for a couple of days with romantic gestures. But it wound up being a really fun hobby. And then we learned more about the greater audio community, because audio drama has a number of communities online that are really well developed. And there's a lot of great audio fiction content that we were completely oblivious to. And we were introduced to through this community, the Audio Drama Hub on Facebook. Which we were living in England at the time in Oxford, and my ability to record things was somewhat limited. So it was, our talent and trade got so much better in that one season, from season one to season two. The jump of quality was really a big game changer for us. And then we got more serious with it. Caitlin had an idea for a different story. We'd become friends with many of the shows that we listened to, again, specifically No Sleep. And we'd become friends with a couple of the voice actors who randomly were friends of the show, were involved. We were able to get voices on our show. And she asked if they would agree to a crazy new idea she had for some people finding a signal in the Arctic called the White Vault. And about that time, we weren't famous by any stretch of the imagination. We hadn't really had any huge successes. And then that show hit, and it launched The White Vault with these actors. And when we actually had auditions, no one would audition for us. We got 2 auditions for a part that was from a character, for one of the characters. And one of the people who said yes just decided not to record because she was too busy. We were very small time by any stretch of the imagination. The comic had come out. I was selling pretty good on comics, unrelated entirely to the podcasts. But then this, The White Vault, came out, and it really changed everything for us. We had achieved a level of success through this show that was undeniable. And we started a Patreon page, and it kept growing with this show. And it became more and more apparent to us that this could be a career option for us, the thing that we do for fun, our little hobby, might actually not only pay for itself, but it might one day create a career for us. And that was very exciting. And we've been developing that as a business ever since.
That is super interesting.
3 years later.
How did you measure the success of the White Vault? I mean, you had a show before, so you probably could compare from that. But what was happening that you could tell, oh, this is like catching on fire?
When the social media started not coming from us, we always promote our stuff. It's a part of what you do when you're a podcaster is market. If you don't market, your show doesn't get seen by anyone except the people who happen to stumble across it, which is not very frequent. So marketing, other people mentioning us and saying, hey, this show is awesome on Reddit. And it wasn't us. It wasn't Caitlin. It wasn't me. People recommending the show on places like Reddit or Facebook or Twitter, very surprising for us. And the download numbers, seeing the download numbers go up so catastrophically mm-hmm. in a good way was very surprising for us. And that was a measure of success at the time.
Right, because people need to understand that there's no discovery of podcasts besides word of mouth. Like, nobody is going to search the White Vault on Google if they don't even know it exists. So can you talk to me a little bit about the timeline in which the podcast grew?
The show launched in October. We got a couple of shout outs from other shows toward the middle of the month, which is when people actually started taking the show seriously. Shout outs from our friends was the biggest growth we'd ever seen. It got us to kind of like, okay, people are listening to the show instead of just the 12 people who'd heard our trailer or so. And our Facebook page had zero interactivity at the time. By Christmas that year, the end of the year or so, December, or Hanukkah for us, we had seen a lot of traction, and the show had already exceeded anything Liberty had ever done combined. Liberty also had a bit of a setback, so it's not like a full easy comparison for us. We migrated the RSS, so we did lose all of the Liberty fans when we did that migration. Mm-hmm. But migration aside, we still saw that the numbers were really, really good for us. We had over like 1,000 listeners, and that was a huge deal. I can't remember what the number exactly was, but I know being over 1,000 was a huge deal for us back in those days. It was like unthinkable for us.
Right.
My mother said, if you can get 1,000 people to care about what you make, you know, you'll be really successful. So that was like a big measure of success for us.
I know,
We were well over that. I think we might have been in like the 10,000s just organically. And then over the course of 3 years, we've turned it into a career. I think the turning point for us was maybe the season two of The White Vault. After season two, so a full year and a half had gone by. And then we decided this could support Caitlin as a job. So she made it her job to write all these fiction stories through our Patreon.
Do you feel like having a community, being known by, you know, having met the No Sleep people, having, you know, kind of like participated in that community, helped with the launch of the show?
No Sleep helped us, undoubtedly. That is a huge part of it. So in multiple ways, No Sleep helped us because, one, it gave us the emotional like validation mm-hmm. of the show. When we released Liberty Critical Research, David Cummings, the host of No Sleep, agreed to be a voice on the very first episode just because he's a nice guy. And what that did for us personally as creators validated the thing that we had no idea what we were doing. We didn't know if we were doing it right. We didn't know if we could make it. But having him as like our big name, even if most people don't know who David Cummings is, to him, like it's like having John Wayne on your Western.
Right.
That's the level of gravity for us. And when we heard him say like, hey, Travis and Caitlin, I've recorded this voice for you. I hope you enjoy it. Brace yourself. So he, like hearing that in the audio recording before his lines even just blew us away. So
yeah.
Personally, that was a huge validating moment. And then as a indicator of download numbers. It also boosted our download numbers. Not having his voice in the show, maybe it did as well, but when they gave us an endorsement for The White Vault and Liberty, that really helped us as well, numbers-wise. And it wasn't something that we really had even planned or accounted for. It just happened, and we are so incredibly grateful
for
that.
Yes, building a network is critical, and not just for podcasting. So it can be very intimidating to reach out to your heroes. How did you get in touch with them, and how did you create the opportunity to start a relationship with them?
I've been trying to voice on No Sleep for a long time. I'm not a great voice actor. I don't want to say rejected, but I haven't been accepted yet as a voice actor for No Sleep. I've played accordion on the show, but over the years, like that is the podcast we listen to. Every time Caitlin and I go somewhere, we're listening to No Sleep. So we have a very close tie to the show. We purchase all the season passes. We're super fans. I think having a relationship with the show is really, you have the ability to talk to somebody with the show if you're a fan. And then mm-hmm. we had that relationship before we asked for him to be a voice on our show.
That's amazing.
But I wouldn't like recommend just randomly approaching random shows and saying, "Hey, can you do me a favor?" if that makes sense.
And oh, that makes
yeah,
total
I felt
sense.
Even embarrassed to reach out and do so, but it was really cool.
Absolutely. No, on the contrary. But I think that if you are inspired by someone's work or someone's career, you should absolutely reach out and offer them to help. That might mean being part of their subscription, Patreon, maybe it means something else. But trying to start this relationship and fostering it in a way that serves them is a great way to be able one day to ask for, "Hey, this is my work. This is what I did. Would you mind take a listen?"
And if they say no, it's also not the end of the world. You still, you know, I guess I wouldn't predicate it on it being an important thing in that sense. But if it does work out, it can be great.
As long as it's done in a way that serves them, with empathy and trying to help, I think you will always find a positive communication back.
I would agree. It's kind of funny. That's also how we got a bunch of our voice actors. Like we've worked with a couple of celebrity voices for some of our shows, from The Walking Dead and Borderlands and Nancy Drew. And they've all sort of developed out of these relationships that we've built over the years, related or unrelated to our podcasts.
And that's super interesting. Did you, I would imagine those actors may have agents, may have like, you know, gatekeepers in between. How did you met them or started a relationship with them?
There's a lot of different instances. Space Ghost, George Lowe, for instance, is the voice of Space Ghost among most of the voices in The Brack Show, a bunch of Adult Swim television. Mm-hmm. I met him at a convention because I was doing a bunch of convention sales for my comic books, and we chatted quite a bit because we both went to a small convention that was widely unsuccessful, and
right.
we had a fun time complaining about it with each other for part of the convention. Just kind of, I can't say we became friends, but we shared a very intimate moment of like humor. We had to drive a very long distance to go to a very small, unsuccessful convention, and we made it fun.
This is amazing, because this comic book that you explained to me being irrelevant to the podcast and did not, you know, cross over readers and listeners, kind of led you to this conversion circuit where you met your voice actors and all the people that helped you start it.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how when one creates something, it immediately opens up a world of opportunity, and you just have to be ready for the taking.
Well, it's interesting. So the comic and also my band had me at conventions most weekends out of the year. So I would go to play. I usually would play a festival or an event once a month, and then I'd also have to sell comics once a month. So 2 weekends, I'd be basically busy until I kind of got out of that circuit. But because I was doing all those circuits, I met a bunch of voice actors from various shows that we mentioned. And also, I've gotten to work with some really fantastic composers. I've met dozens of artists who are incredibly talented, who have worked with. And that's where I've done a lot of networking. It has been at those events to meet the people who are on the more famous side of the spectrum, or mainstream famous, I should say.
God, I have so many more questions, so I'd like to change gear. I'd like to talk about business and monetization. and Patreon, because you have a very successful Patreon following. And so my first question is, how much Patreon represents in the overall monetization of your podcast?
For us, it's most of it. I'm gonna take this question from a slightly different angle. So let's look at different ways to monetize a podcast. And then I will go into the Patreon piece as a part of this, but I think it's important to also understand that our way isn't the only way. So merchandise, you think merchandise is gonna be the biggest thing. You've made this show Homecoming, it's the best, biggest, greatest, latest, or the Black Tapes or Night Vale. Merchandise isn't actually that big of a sales generator for most shows, unless you are Night Vale. It is almost inconsequential. The amount of effort you put into creating the merchandise is usually to drive something else like a Patreon or support a live event. Live events are also a way that people can make money. Again, Night Vale does this very successfully. They're a very small cast, very low cost. They travel from place to place. They fill up very large venues and they put on a great show. And they do this fairly inexpensively compared to large cast audio dramas like us, where you'd be flying in people from Europe. Another area of revenue for podcasting, and this is now just getting into pretty pure form podcasting, is advertising. It's something you hear on the radio. So cost per mil, a single episode of your podcast has to get X, or in this instance, 10,000 downloads within the first 30 days of release in order to be considered in this model. And it's a very high bar to clarify, especially in the indie space, especially in nonfiction. Fiction, it's a different game somewhat, but it's still a very high bar of 10,000. And after doing that, the average cost that you'll get paid is probably around $30. It's anywhere between 20 or 15 even, all the way up to 50, depending on placement, if it's mid-roll, pre-roll, post-roll, that's before, middle, or at the end of the episode, how long it is, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. There are variables, and if it's host read or if it's a dynamic insert by somebody else is reading it and just sort of sticks it into your podcast episode. Long story short, cost per mil is like if you have 10,000 downloads for a single episode within the first 30 days and you got $30, you'd be looking at $300 for that ad. And that doesn't include the time it takes you to find the sponsor. That doesn't include the time it takes you to put together the advertisement or put it into your show. So it is cost prohibitive for some people. If you're at 1,000 downloads, that's $30 that you've spent to do all these things to try and get a sponsor. And it's very hard to get sponsors, or it can be very difficult to get sponsors on your own. And it's a bunch of cold calling.
That is the main source of economy of the podcasting world for now. And
that is.
It makes a lot of sense. This is why we're getting so many talk shows, because it makes a lot of sense to, you know, make shows with interviews and things that are really easy to make that last for an hour and in which you can put a ton of ads in between, because you can create as many episodes as you want. It's very easy to make, and also people love it. So I think, right, so there's advertising, which, you know, as you said, it sounds like not a good fit for audio fiction and audio dramas in particular.
It can be. You just have to have a lot of downloads. So the shows that are really making money on ad revenue are in the 80,000 download and up range. And those are the people who are doing it professionally. Those are the Adventure Zone. Those are other shows like Critical Role, like the things from Q Code. Those are the Titans or Pacific Northwest Stories, as they're infamously known for their advertising, for better or worse, and Bombas Socks, the ads that they have on their show. So those are the kind of people who can make download revenue work for them as a business. And on your way there, you can certainly do it, and it will bring in revenue, especially if your costs are very low and you have maybe one or two actors. That can be sustainable. Our revenue model for us, we are very, very, very 95-ish% reliant on Patreon, which is the crowdsourcing engine that people donate money to. You can use other crowdsourcing engines like Kickstarter or Indiegogo to prepay for the work, or even pay for it after and tell everyone they'll get paid if you guys hit your goal, which is scary. But there are shows that have done that successfully and unsuccessfully. Wooden Overcoats does it with great success. They just kickstarted their fourth season a few months ago, and it should be coming out at some point in the near future. But also, Patreon is a reoccurring monthly revenue or per creation revenue. So that is useful because then suddenly you have a budget that you can set over a course of time and you can set up rewards that maybe don't cost you anything, like extra content, like the behind the scenes features of a DVD. And suddenly you have this source of revenue that is supporting your podcast. And when I say revenue, I don't necessarily mean you're making money, but it's offsetting costs, and that's great.
You have now, last time I checked, let's say you have about 1,000 Patreon fans right now, which sounds enormous.
Almost there. We want to get
right
there.
Well, guys, we need how many more do you need?
We need 40 more.
40 more. Come on. We'll try to send as many people as we can, although a lot of your people are coming here, so they may be already your Patreon fans. So it sounds like a lot, but I do want to paint a realistic picture of what that means. And I guess my first question about it is, what was the journey to get there? How long did it take? And what was the curve like? Was it a linear growth? Is it stuff that happened in the last year only? How much work had to go into it and how long it took?
Sure. Oof. We have been on Patreon for almost 4 years. So consider that we have been working this for a very, very, very long time, since October 2016, basically, when we started off with 5 patrons. And that, by the way, thanks to all those 5 patrons, 2 of them were family members who did it out of pity. So I appreciate them a lot, and I appreciate their support early on. It made us look good. We had so we had 3 real patrons and 2 that were family members. And it kind of stayed in the 30 or less patrons for the first year. So let's assume, I think Patreon says the average person on Patreon is $6, but we were not seeing that. Our average was closer to $3 at the time because we really didn't have much on there. So we had, $90 in our best month of 2017 to 2018, October of 2018. You know, we were making $90 on all the shows we were creating
for a year. So that's for a year, it kind of stayed flat to like $100 a month.
It stayed flat. That was a flat year for us.
So that's a whole year of you creating content, not only creating content that you release for free, but creating content that is exclusive to them. What were you doing during that year?
Yeah, we had almost nothing on there. We had a bonus episode where Aethor, the main character Jonas Thorason from The White Vault, myself and Caitlin told a story about penguins in The White Vault, mm-hmm. and it was an ice cream, and it was like a little horror story short. And we had behind the scenes stuff, and we had a couple of silly interviews. We did creator commentaries for the episodes. And that was pretty effectively what we had, not very much, in terms of specifically made for Patreon content.
Right.
It was, I put comic books up on there thinking that would be of interest. It really wasn't for people. I tried to put up, non-physical merchandise, basically digital stuff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that great of interest because there's not a lot of crossover between people who listen to podcasts and people who like comic books. We tried to get creative in those ways, and that just didn't work for us. In 2018, we created what's called The White Vault Artifact. It is a very intimate story about a doctoral student in Oxford University charged with the examination of this mysterious artifact. It's a really cool story. It's a really scary and messed up story. Caitlin wrote it. I produced it. All the sound effects were recorded in Oxford when we lived there in advance, not realizing we would use them for this episode. Mm-hmm. It took place very close to where we lived in Oxford and the places that Caitlin worked while she was going to school there. So the story is really intimate to us, and it had a lot of heart from us. And that was the growing point for our Patreon.
So that's, you're talking about an entire audio drama, an entire season. How many episodes is that?
It's 10 episodes, so it is a full season. The episodes are shorter, so they're closer to 10-minute episodes instead of 20 minutes, but as a air quotes mini-series that is half as long as the main series and contains the same number of actors, mm-hmm. if not more, it was a pretty large undertaking for us to create while we were creating a show every 2 weeks. Because you have to understand, Patreon you can do monthly or by creation. For us, we're by creation, so we are always creating content every 2 weeks. We have to release content, or we aren't able to pay for the content we create. We realized what did worked and didn't work through a bunch of trial and error. You know, we asked the people who were there, what are they here for? We asked people what they would like to see more of. And the short answer is people are there to support you. It's about the personal engagement. They're there to make sure that we're able to continue creating the stories they love. They're there because they like us. They're there because there's a bit of a community that we've built together. Now more recently through our Discord, like Fool and Scholar fans kind of have a place to chat and hang out, which is really neat. That was a much later development. That's only this year for us. But the driving factor is content. We're adding value to them being there by giving them exclusive content and in a way that gets people very excited. So Artifact is a really cool story that takes place in the universe. You don't have to listen to it at all, but you're missing one of our best stories. Like, straight up, that is the reason why people are have expressed why they went there in that point in time from all the reporting we did. So we created more exclusive content in late 2018 and 2019 and 2020. We've really amped that up. We have a musical on there. We've got multiple exclusive one-off stories that you can hear, like Ashore, No Lira's Day Off, The White Alt, which is just sort of a comedy thing where if Walter Heath were every character in The White Vault, acting as them all, it's goofy and silly. We have a full-blown series called Imperial, which takes place in China that we put up there, which has been a lot of fun to put together. We actually featured the endangered language of Manchu, which was the language of China in the 1700s, but is now pretty much close to being extinct. And now we're releasing Iluka, which takes place in the southern hemisphere, near off the coast of Australia in the Antarctic, and it's on a boat, and bad stuff happens on a boat after they find something on the floor of the ocean that they shouldn't.
Well, that sounds kind of exciting. So, since you started this strategy, how was your Patreon growth?
Critically successful. That's how we got from like 30 to 100, which is where we stayed for a long time, about most of 2018. And then 2019, 2020 was a lot of content-driven growth, but also the growth of our shows themselves has also contributed. Almost all of our patrons came from like maybe middle of last year, like literally over the last 12 months, let's say. That's the majority of our growth is over the last 12 months.
Did you do something different in the last 12 months, or was it like a sort of a compounded effect, or both?
We started promoting it. We were afraid to mention it on our show. We were afraid to like be really verbal about it and kind of pushy about it because we didn't think that it would be in good taste to do so. But when we explained like, hey, this could be a career for us, this could be a job, right? I was able to leave my job and become a full-timer on this for very close to the most part. And that was only because of fans. And I expressed like, hey, I could leave my job if we make this happen. So we started really pushing it like middle of early 2019 when Caitlin was thinking about doing that, or maybe late 2018. We're like, hey, we could get Caitlin on this full time if we can grow it a little bit more. Is this worth mentioning on our show? And the answer is yes for us.
How do you split your time between working on your main show that's free and the show that's behind the Patreon wall?
I usually put 1 week toward the main show, 1 week toward the other show, 1 week toward the main show, 1 week toward the premium show, at varying degrees of... And when I say 1 week toward the main show, that's like a super intense, I'm going to die week. And then usually the other show is a bit more relaxed, the other week rather, the off week.
Got it.
Doing a bunch of admin stuff, production stuff for the main show, so that the next show is already being produced, that I already have actors for it, that I'm already able to find resources.
And do you split the resources and the budget the same way?
I would say we probably spend a fair portion of the budget, probably 10 to 20% on Patreon exclusive content and 80% toward keeping the main shows going.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The Patreon content isn't, because it's shorter. We only do a mini series a year. So we're talking about a 20 week life cycle of creating stuff, in that sense, which is the most difficult 20 weeks of the year for me.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
But, we have seasonal. So let's put a perspective here. We're releasing a new show every 2 weeks, but we do it seasonally, and we've got three seasons. We've got the Liberty season. We've got the the White Vault season, we've got the Vast season. Right now we're in Vast. Vast is the most intense for me, and it's the most intense for Caitlin because she's writing the White Vault, which is extremely science heavy, and she has to do a bunch of research. So we're both working a lot in that sense. At the same time as that, once a month we release our show Dark Dice, which is its own on top of everything else. We don't even get, there's no revenue for Dark Dice. It just comes out on top of everything as a premium because we're sort of able to somehow make it work when we can. And then the premium stuff is the first 20 weeks out of March to sort of the present till next Thursday.
That's amazing, because so you're basically able to release content, whether it's in a feed, because all those shows that you're mentioning, Vast, White Vault, and Liberty, and Dark Dice, are all on different feeds, right? So,
correct.
You're just in a season, you're just jumping from feed to feed, but you're basically posting content all year round, right?
Yeah, we can't stop, or else we don't have a job. So we're creating White Vault from October to March, Liberty from March to May or April, and then Vast to fill the space in between till we get back to the White Vault in October. And it's, as a result, we cannot create new stories as easily without knocking out one of our main shows. So we're kind of looking at what we're doing, and we're trying to figure out, like, okay, so these are definitely the three brands we're working with, and if we wanted to tell a different story, we'd have to figure out a way to do it very creatively, because there are only so many weeks in the year, and because we have the things we're doing, and because we are two people.
So to talk a little bit about marketing, I would assume a lot of the focus is on the public feeds and your listeners kind of funnels down to your Patreon from there. I know that events and conventions are a big part of your efforts. How many events did you go to in pre-COVID times?
I've been over 50 events in the last couple years.
That is insane. That's insane.
Oh, it's probably closer to 70. Last year, I think we did one every, probably about 12 last year, somewhere between 8 and 12, depending on if it was just Caitlin or just myself, but usually it was both of us.
Oh. Well, here's your marketing budget. You have to fly there.
You can't just teleport there. Yeah, we fly to them. We have to get a hotel. And they're not paid for by the event usually. So, you know, we had to fly out to New York. Caitlin flew to New York City, October, for New York Comic Con to do a panel. And then immediately after, she went to Boston, and I flew to Boston, and we did a live show in Boston in Podtails. Then immediately after, we flew to Austin. We did the Austin Film Festival. That was a busy 3 weeks. And that was just 3 weeks. And we still had to produce episodes while that was happening because we can't stop. So 2 weeks, I'm not home, and I'm on a recording call in a hotel lobby with someone in London recording their lines for The White Vault because of the craziness that was happening in South America at the time.
It sounds like you're running a little bit at capacity. How do you see growing from there, knowing that you probably cannot add more work to your daily life? And how do you see the growth of your Patreon to help you achieve that?
There's like a sort of perpetual growth that takes place over time. And if you're like, there's that expected growth, which is not very much, but you know it's going to grow because people do talk about your show and they share it with their friends on occasion, and it's awesome. I would like to try and double what we're doing over the course of on Patreon. I'd like to double it in the next couple of months. That'd be really cool. I haven't quite figured out how we're going to do that, but I've set a goal and I'm trying to reach it. And I'm trying to be more vocal that we have a Patreon.
Yeah.
As far as a production, I think we have these stories that we have to tell. And basically my job for the next year is already booked. I know everything that I'm doing. Caitlin has these outlines. She's got these scripts. My life as I know it has been dictated every week in 2 week increments until actually the next 2 years. I pretty much know what we're producing, more or less. So my hope is that I'm able to deliver on getting the right people into the roles, and that I'm able to deliver on showcasing them in the best way possible, making their performances really shine with soundscapes and sound effects that will create an immersive story in every instance. That's kind of my big goal. So I have these sort of strange goals because they're not really, I don't dream. I don't have the the original story content ideas, but I do deliver on the ideas that Caitlin is creating and we've kind of worked in and hashed out.
And what would you think about putting your existing show behind the paywall or licensing, you know, past seasons?
Well, we basically have our main shows and they stay free. We think that would be very unfair and disingenuous to pull them off of being free. So the White Vault will be free, Vast Horizon will be free, Liberty will be free. However, if we have like an additional story that's not the core story, we can put that on our Patreon. Something that's not going to affect people's ability to appreciate the main stories is kind of the key piece. It adds to the experience, or it's its own maybe piece in the same universe.
Right.
We have ideas potentially for Vast spinoffs. Caitlin has created a very amazing universe in the Vast Horizon science fiction world. And it's got such a rich history and so much depth. She could spin it off into easily like a book series or a Patreon exclusive miniseries very easily. And it would not be a surprise to me at all. And I don't think our fans would be upset because it's a different story. It's not Nolira and her adventure.
Can I respectfully push back on a detail that you and ask you about?
Yeah.
Why would it be disingenuous to decide that all the work that you've put into White Vault, actually people should pay for it?
Because it has been something that people have not paid for. We've put out into the world, and the White Vault core series is our business. Like, it is our marketing tool, but it is also our business. And our business is to create free entertainment for people who very likely can't afford it or who would otherwise be without it. And I see myself as a public entertainer. If you do that, you follow the EOS 10 model or the Dark Tome. Fred and I have talked greatly about how he really upset his fan base by putting it exclusively on Stitcher for a season and how much pushback he's gotten, and you know, people felt betrayed, this, that, and the other, or EOS 10, where they put their first season behind a paywall suddenly out of nowhere with no sort of warning. At least from my perspective as a listener, I didn't see a warning, and I kind of followed them on some social media. It feels weird to have something available to you and then suddenly it's gone, or hear the first two seasons, but to hear the conclusion and season finale, you must pay some money. I think you can do that. I respect people who do. I feel for me, it would be disingenuous just based on our philosophy and what we create. We have 5 seasons of The White Vault that are going to come out. Season 4 is this year. Season 5 is next October. And that'll be that. That story will be concluded. We'll have maybe other things in the same universe. Maybe we won't. I'm not sure. But we have ideas. And whatever will fill that space from October through March will be free.
Right. However, and I completely, I 100% agree with you here. If you publicly made a promise that your show will stay free and you've made them to be freely accessible, then you should live by your promise. But I would still rather see creators grow. And if that means they have to revise their business model in order for them to continue making the show, then that makes also sense to me. But it might be a false problem anyway, because I think that free might be even a better business model than hiding behind a paywall or a subscription, because it serves as marketing and it's the only way the word gets around and people find you.
I agree. And if I could also add one other thing, it would be, I think the greatest crime of all within this would be to the actors, because they signed on specifically for the intent of us releasing a free release show. They gave us their voices and their time. And, you know, they weren't paid SAG rates because we simply can't afford it. We didn't pay ourselves at all when we were making season one. So they signed on with the expectation that it would be a free release that they could share and showcase. And to suddenly cut it off would be disingenuous to our cast and our crew.
So to summarize, I think if you're going to keep your shows for free, you have the responsibility as a creator to grow your Patreon to a point where it will allow you to keep doing so. Is that a fair summary?
You don't have to, but for us, it's the right way. I know, again, Fred, the Dark Tome, he couldn't have funded the next season of the Dark Tome without making it an exclusive for a period of 1 year. And I also respect that because I know these things can be expensive. People think, you know, it's audio, it's cheap, but it does have a lot of hard costs associated with it that can be very expensive. And recouping those costs even ahead of time is great. I don't know. It doesn't always work out on the far end after you've been paid in terms of maintaining your listenership, but it does allow the show to actually get created, which is has its advantages that are very good.
Right. I know. If it doesn't exist, then
show exactly, versus no show.
Show versus no show. Or, you know, it works for everyone to just, you know, have things coming out. So I think this is a really great place to stop. Travis, do you have any shows you'd like to promote or to plug into this? Feel free to go ahead. And otherwise, thank you so much for doing this. I know you're like super busy, so I appreciate it.
Oh, no, I would just like to add, we have 4 podcasts. They are available to listen to for free, depending on what you like. The White Vault, Arctic Horror. It's got lots of historical science fiction or sciencey stuff. Hard science fiction, actually. Archaeological Practices. Terrors Lurking Beneath the Ice. We have Vast Horizon, which is about a woman surviving on a spaceship. Some horrible things happen to her, and we learn more about her past through a series of flashbacks as she tries to survive the dangers. We have Dark Dice, which is a dark fantasy story taking place in the woods where people are being murdered by a doppelganger that assumes the form and voice of whoever it kills. And finally, we have Liberty, where right now our current main season is Tales from the Tower. It's a series of one-off horror stories all set within the same universe, and what lurks beneath the steel and shadows of our shining city, we will find out.
And we're going to put a link in the show notes so that everybody can find them. Thank you so much, Travis, for taking the time. I know now that, like, how crazy busy you are, so super grateful for you taking the time and being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. You'll find all the useful links in the show notes. And if you'd like to see the transcript and other information, you can go on euphony.media and we'll make those available there as well. Next week, we're going to have another amazing guest coming. And thank you for your patience. We'll start to see the light at the end of the tunnel and resume our normal schedule. In the meantime, please stay safe. Thank you so much for listening and see you next time.